Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station One podcast, the first one officially of 2017. We are here to talk all about the world of Atari. That's right, kids. We are going back to 8-bit land and going to be playing Pong. We're going to be playing Asteroids. We're going to be playing Combat and other fun games. And we have a great crew to talk all about it. And we have a gentleman here who is there for almost the very first Atari. Let's welcome Mr. Mike Gordon to the show.
Howdy. Yes, we are starting the new year by looking way back. Yeah, well, it's the anniversary of Atari this year, so we wanted to give it its props and just have some fun. And, you know, usually the holiday season is when I think about Atari a lot, because I got my first Atari for Christmas, and I used to constantly get games for the holidays. So, I associate the Atari and gameplay with the holidays anyway. So it kind of ties in. Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
Sounds good to me.
Absolutely. And yeah. Hey, this used to talk about games. We don't get to do that very often.
No, we actually haven't done a ton of video games on the show. We've talked about World of Warcraft in the past and a couple others, but we've never actually looked at a game system.
No, well, you and I, and this is one that both you and I and, well, everybody our age owned. And yeah, because you and I aren't like avid gamers right now. So fortunately, we've got some people that are and really know a lot more about gaming than we do. So it should be fun talk.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it'll be a lot of fun. And we want to hear from you guys at home, of course. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Or you could call us at 404-963-9057. And this year we are going to get you guys more involved than ever on the show. More details coming in a little bit. So with that being said, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find about what's on our minds. Mr. Mike, you went to the movies.
I did. I went to the movies because I went and saw the newest entry in the Underworld series. It's called Blood Wars. And it was just released this week. It is the fifth entry into the Underworld series. This is the fourth one to star Kate Beckinsale. And I'm a big fan of this franchise. I particularly really love the first one. It's just a great movie. I'm a big vampire, gothic fan, that kind of thing. So that was right in my wheelhouse, and I thought they did a really excellent job. Some of the sequels and some of the other chapters in the series have not lived up to the first one, I'll be quite frank. Some of them are fun, but the plots are a little weird. And the third one is a flashback. It's not bad, but it's just kind of a flashback and doesn't really tell you anything new. It doesn't move the franchise forward. With the fourth one a few years ago, it was nice to have Kate come back and move the franchise forward, but it wasn't really a great movie, in my opinion. So I was somewhat skeptical, didn't know what to think going into this one. Wasn't sure if this was going to be Kate's last entry as Celine, but I was very pleased with this one. It is an hour and a half. It's not very long, it is very action-packed. There's some great action sequences, and there's some really cool elements to this movie that bring me right back to the first one. A lot of the development of vampires and the clans and the way that works and the war they have with the Lycans is explored a little bit more. And the franchise definitely moves forward. I by the ending, which I'm not going to spoil, but you do have like a direction that they can go if they choose to go. I could see where this one kind of could be the her last one, but I doubt it. I think and she looks great. I mean, you know, even though she's been doing this for over 10 years, she looks fantastic and doesn't look like she slowed down a bit. And these movies have to be pretty taxing for her. She doesn't usually do action movies, so this is about as action as Kate Beckinsale gets, I think. And but she handles it very well. She looks like a skilled warrior, at least in my eyes, when she's fighting the both the vamps and the lichens alike. And it's great fun. I saw it in 3D, and I have to say that 3D was pretty good. There were a lot of sequences that I felt were enhanced by the 3D. And I'm very pleased to say that this is a good entry into this franchise. And if it continues, it's nice to know that it's in a good place now, that it can go forward and actually get maybe even better as it goes on.
Now, you've always raved about these movies, so I'm very happy to hear you so enthused about this one.
Yeah, I was like I said, I didn't know what to expect. Because the franchise has been kind of inconsistent. I love the first one. The others are kind of like, not so much. But this one I think is probably my favorite after the first one. So, there's a lot of cool stuff and a lot of great at performances, not only Kate Beckinsale, reprising her role, but Laura Pulver, who most of us know from, she was in Sherlock. She was been in a bunch of stuff, and she's great. Charles Dance, from Game of Thrones, notably, as well as other things, is great in this as well. And there's a lot of other actors who I kind of know from various things, but they do a great job, and it's just a fun movie. So I would say that if you're a fan of the Underworld franchise, this is you should definitely go see this one, even if you haven't been particularly pleased with the last few. I think that you should give this one a shot. If you're not a fan of the Underworld franchise, if you've seen them and you hate them, this is not going to win you over. So don't go in thinking, oh, well, Mike said this one was a good one, so I'm sure this is going to win me over. I doubt this one is going to really make the difference for you. You probably won't like this one as well. So, but I would say that if you are an Underworld fan, this is good news for you.
Very awesome, sir. Awesome.
Have you seen any of them, Mike?
I saw the first two.
Gotcha. And a lot of people checked out after the second one.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Especially since the third one didn't have Kate Beckinsale. A lot of people tapped out and were like, oh, I'm done.
Well, it was a neat concept. It was, because it was the whole vampires and werewolf thing.
Yeah.
And so the thought of it really intrigued me. But after I started watching the third one on cable, and it was just like, yeah, no. So I never went back, which is kind of sad, because you were like, you never went back?
Oh my. Well, God. I can't say that the fourth one is a great movie. So it was nice to see Kate return in the fourth one, but I must admit the fourth one kind of left me like pretty cold, and I was very surprised that they were going to do another one. So, this one is much better than the fourth one was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I agree. I mean, I think people should check it out.
I definitely think so.
And Kate, ooh, I mean, I, you know,
well, yeah,
I don't need another restraining order, but damn, like she is just, great to watch in action.
I could totally see that. You got my vote on that one, my friend.
And you, sir, what have you been up to?
Well, truthfully, you know, for those who live here in the South, we had, you know, Snowpocalypse 2017 on Friday and Saturday here in Atlanta, where the whole city pretty much shut down because we got a dusting of snow. Depends where you lived. Some people, like where Mike lived, got rain and a little bit of ice. Where I lived, we actually got some snow and ice. And so, you know, we decided to hang low, and I actually took my podcast partner's advice on a TV show, and I suggested to Judy, hey, let's watch the show Penny Dreadful. And we've done an episode on it. And that was last summer, I think we did.
Because it just ended last year.
Right, exactly. And so I figured, all right, 8 episodes for the first season, 10 for the second, and I think 9 for the final season. And so we pretty much power watched our way all the way through the first season. And man, seeing Judy cringe with the first episode with the spiders right at the very beginning and going from there, it was just awesome.
There's a lot to shit. I feel because Michelle would not even be able to stomach any of it. But I mean, there's some more cringeworthy stuff to come. I mean, it doesn't get easier, that's for sure.
Oh, some of these scenes with the vampires, it's just amazing.
But I got to ask you, especially since I'm really curious because of your history with Doctor Who, I think this is the best thing I've ever seen Billy Piper in.
Billy Piper is amazing, and we're only on the first season, and I hear she's even better in the second season.
She does get better as well, but I think all the actors are spot on.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. You know, Timothy Dalton, Eva Green, you know, Billy Piper, and I'm saying I like Billy Piper, but I've always said I don't mind Billy Piper as an actress because there's other things I've seen her in that I've loved. Yep. And everything.
You even appreciated her as the moment on Doctor Who.
Exactly. I didn't appreciate her as Rose, you know, especially this with David Tennant. I loved her as Rose with, you know, Eccleston in the first season. It was just interesting to see, though, you know, I loved, you know, what they did with Frankenstein. And they threw you for a huge loop with this the first season.
Yeah, the creature is so cool. But the real creature. Creature. You're right.
Because
I don't know how much spoilers we want to get into, but.
Yeah, what they do is with the creature, don't get comfortable with him. That's all I need to say, because they throw you for a really big loop at the end of the third episode, I think, or second. And it's just like,
well, the real creature, please stand up.
Exactly. And it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, the portrayals of, you know, you have Van Helsing, you have Dorian Gray, you have Dracula, you have Renfield, you have all these cool things. It's just awesome. And
it's mixed up in a blender so that it feels fresh without feeling disrespectful to the original source material.
No, I was like, telling a friend.
Like they rebooted it, but it not in a way that you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
No,
it feels like they just really, like almost like what Alan Moore did with League of Extraordinary Men.
Exactly. And it's interesting because a friend of mine, you know, who's really into horror and stuff, and she's never watched this. And I was telling her that we power watched it. And she says, so what's it about? And I said, pretty much the late 1800s, England at the time. And you basically have these fictional characters in real life.
Is a very gothic version of.
Oh, exactly. You
know, so it's not like it's not a true to life story.
Oh, no.
It's not the way things really were back then, but it's very much like a Penny Dreadful. It's a very much a dramatic, a melodramatic interpretation of that. But it's done, like I said, just so the characters are so good and the acting is great. And it's just there's so many great moments.
Exactly. Eva Green, who I run hot and cold on.
Interesting.
In different roles, is amazing in this role.
Yes. Yes.
And she is just, wow. It's just, you know, her as Vanessa Ives is just like riveting. Every scene she's in, she eats it pretty much. She eats it and spits it out. Especially, you know, and just when the scenes where she's in the scenes with Timothy Dalton or some of these scenes she's in with Reeves Carney, who plays Dorian Gray.
Mm-hmm.
The chemistry between all of these characters is just amazing.
And, what'd you think of the one American?
Oh, I like him. I don't want to spoil anything, though. You know, because, you know, if you want to hear spoils on it, listen to when Mike was talking about it earlier in the year. And it was, you know, there's some scenes with him. I love his character. And I'm still in the first season. And there's some things about him I'm suspecting. And you know, but I haven't been proven right yet. So right. I'm waiting to see what happens.
You're most likely right.
But even the scenes with him and Dorian Gray. And it's interesting because Judy was not familiar with the Dorian Gray story.
Oh, gotcha.
And so I had her, you know, when they first introduced him, I paused it and I said, go read up on who Dorian Gray is. And she says, that's a book I need to read now.
I don't know if I've actually read that one.
Really? Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I must admit, some of those classics I haven't actually read. I don't think I've ever actually read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, really? It's a lot different than the movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I've read adaptations. I've seen adaptations, but I don't think I've actually read this. And that's one of the things I hope to correct at some point. Stoker's Dracula is one of my favorite books, period. So I can only imagine that I would enjoy it. I just haven't had a chance to.
Of the things I find interesting is, like, Victor Frankenstein, he refers to the Shelley book in it, you know, like, that the book was written, you know, about him or something.
Oh, right.
And it's just like, well, that's something I didn't expect with that. So it was a lot of fun, and it was a great way to spend a snowy day. And, you know, we had the fireplace going and we just watched, and Judy had her face covered half the time. So yeah, this is not for the faint of heart, folks. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm glad I took your advice, my friend. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you like it. I know that sometimes we're not on the same page, but because we each have our own tastes. But I do think that, you know, for all the – and I'm not saying that it's not that Game of Thrones is not a good show, but it kind of almost annoyed me how much people were loving Game of Thrones and Penny Dreadful wasn't being talked about at all. And in fact – the viewership wasn't there either. And I don't know if it's because it was on Showtime and that's, you know, has fewer subscribers than maybe HBO, but I mean, they had to sort of rush a finale because I don't think it was planned to end when it did. So, at least it was able to end on its own terms, and there is a definite ending when you reach that point. But, I think the show is just as good as anything else I've seen in a while. And like I said, it treats those characters, those literary characters that we love, so with a lot of respect.
Exactly. So it's definitely worth checking out, my friends. And, you know, you could find it. I was really surprised to find it up on Netflix. And so, you know, check it out.
Absolutely. Wow. Who knew that both of our raves this week are going to be about vampires?
Right. Hey, people say we suck. Come on.
That's true.
Well, one of the new things we want to try for this year is getting you guys at home more involved. We want you guys to send us your rants and raves of the week. We definitely want to hear from you, and you could either send it by email, and we'll read it here on the air, or, you know what, you can also call us and, you know, record your rant and rave, and we'll play it right after ours. This is how we want you guys to get included. You want you guys part of the show. So, of course, you can find us and, you know, write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right. That's it for this week. And we're going to take a break. And we'll be back. And we have a new victim this week in the Geek Seat.
Hey guys, it's Nick, and, well, time to talk movies. No, not that. How about something else? Much better. So, we had this idea for a small spin-off, a second podcast, if you will, where we would watch an entire movie series so we can compare them one-to-one.
My name is Bond.
Bond.
It's Bond.
Bond.
It's Bond.
It's Bond.
James Bond. Bond.
So every time Q goes...
I missed you. What a pity.
Yes, the legendary 007 wit. Or at least half of it.
I'm your new quartermaster.
We will watch it and compare them. From the highs...
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
To the lows.
I thought Christmas only comes once a year.
Tune in every other week as we... Compare every Bond girl, every plot, and every henchman on Mission Briefings, starting January 2016. Find Mission Briefing on iTunes or as part of the Myopia Defend Your Childhood feed.
Welcome back. We are now here for the Geek Seat segment, and we have one of our favorite guests that we had quite a few years ago. Gosh, it's been almost 2 years since she's been on the show. We're return, of course, of Saber from the Misbehaving Maidens. Welcome back to ESO.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm good to be back on the podcast. Had a lot of fun last time, and I think we're going to have some fun tonight.
I think so. Also, it's going to be great to talk with you. It's, you know, we met you at Dragon Con after we talked to you and got to see you guys perform. Folks, if you haven't had a chance to see these ladies perform, you are in for a treat.
Yeah, it was a lot of Dragon Con was really fun. We did that back in 2015. And we're hoping to go back again someday. But yeah, it was really great to meet you guys in person after we had, you know, it was like, oh, yay, meeting friends from the internet, you know. So that was always a good time.
Tell us a little bit about how the Misbehaving Mavens got started.
Well, we did auditions in 2013. The official story is that I was working at a pirate bar, and I was already in one folk singing group, and the owner of the bar kept being like, you've got great talent, you've got great, you know, entertainment charisma, but what you really need is like a filthy female group, you know, like just really dirty songs, really bawdy. And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess that would be, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be fun. But I don't know how I feel about this, about putting this together. And after about 4 years, I finally, the owner saying this, I finally relented and I auditioned the Misbehaving Maidens group. And it really evolved. And it's kind of good that I waited the 4 years, because I feel like the message of the group has evolved over time. You know, what started out as a concept of just being like the dirtiest songs you can imagine, it's now the dirtiest songs you can imagine, but also nerdy and also sex positive. So, so it sort of went on a little journey there, but we auditioned, and we actually originally were 7 members, and now we're down to the 4, and we're sort of like the core group now. And we've been performing together, you know, since 2013. So been doing a lot of conventions and events up and down the East Coast. And mostly we, you know, perform locally here in Maryland, in the DC area, but definitely always for more places to go. So
that sounds like it sounds like something that definitely there'd be a lot of call for. I mean, a lot of, especially a lot of conventions, a lot of nerdy sort of events are always looking for, you know, unique music acts.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting is cause you know, we've been going to a lot of different events and we've had a lot of fun working with cons, but it is interesting being an adult, specifically, you know, an adult entertainment group, because while a lot of cons have 21 up content, they don't necessarily have 21 up or 18 plus entertainment. You know, sometimes they'll bring in a burlesque group or something like that, but they don't really know what to do with like a singing group. They're like, how do you guys fit in? And we're like, trust me, we'll fit it in. It's fine. You know? So, you know, and it's one of those things where I feel like they're some events are really hesitant to, you know, bring us in, but the ones that have brought us, you know, into their event and had us featured, you know, they have not regretted it. So, but it's interesting because we, when I started the group, I thought that there would be a little bit more call for it, but I think that a lot of cons, unlike Dragon Con, which is like a huge musical event, right? Don't have a good way of like showcasing musical acts. I don't know. It's been an interesting ride for the last 4 years, seeing which events do music acts and which are like, no, we have no interest in doing that. So, you know.
Well, apart from the filth factor, what kind of music would you say it was, really?
So our sort of genre, you could say, is folk or filk music.
Right.
You know, it's mostly a cappella. We do have a ukulele now. That's one thing with our new album project. We are saying it's 100% more ukulele. Yay! Because we didn't have any on the first album. But... and then our lyrics span everything from, you know, like nerd culture to sex education to traditional folk songs. So like we do still do some of the traditional pieces. We are moving more towards like originals and parodies and things like that. They just scan a little bit better, but also because that's just sort of where our hearts are as far as the lyrics and music is concerned.
Right. Well, typically I know that filk is usually, there's some original content, but a lot of it is more parody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering if you, how much of that, like percentage wise, you guys were doing.
At this point, I would say, oh gosh, I mean, you know, it's hard to lock down a percentage on it. I mean, on the new album that we're going to, that we're working on currently, actually, we just had our first day in the studio this past Sunday, and I'm trying to remember how many originals we're doing. I think we're doing a total of 3 originals and like 4 parodies that we wrote ourselves, and the rest are covers. But for a 12 song album, that's not bad for, you know, for us anyways. So covers for us include like traditional songs that have been around for, you know, a couple hundred years at this point. So,
right. You know. So the licensing on that has expired long ago.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. So, yeah.
Now, you said that that you had auditions way back. Has the band pretty much been the same since then?
Well, like we said, we started out as 7 members, and it was because just so many amazing people auditioned. It was really difficult for me to choose like who to pick. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to throw these 7 ladies together. And then slowly, members had to leave for like school, other musical endeavors that they wanted to pursue, work, you know, whatever. And like I said, we got down to the core 4, and we have been performing together. I guess it's for 3 years now, like just the 4 of us. So there's been a lot of progression as far as the, you know, but none of the members, like they started originally. I haven't, you know, we didn't have anybody leave and somebody new come in like a year in or anything like that. We've just had members leave. So the core 4, it's always been Lucky Annie LeBlanc, Flintlock, Madame Rouge, and myself, Sabre Thompson. And like I said, we've really sort of the music choices that we've had have really, really progressed. That's actually the biggest change that has happened over the past, 4 years or so, is just originally, you know, we were doing things like drinking songs and like traditional Irish pieces and traditional sea shanties. And we were occasionally throwing a dirty lyric in here or there, you know, but we weren't really taking it to that next level. And, you know, like Ren Faire, sort of, if you've ever been to Ren Faire and you go to the body stage, you're like, oh, ha ha, you know, they insinuated that sex was happening. Yes, I heard that there. and we just, over the years, we've taken it to that next level. And as we like to say, we don't do double entendre. We do single entendre. So.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's, and then, but then also our lyrics have become more, you know, more personal and less, I think, even about like the characters that we are on stage, and more about like just the messages that we want to get across. So sex positivity, you know, sex education, LGBTQA+ positive, feminism, and then of course nerdy as well. And like our love for fandoms and like fandom pairings. And, you know, we sing a cover of the Double Click song, Will They or Won't They? And that will be on the new album. And But we wrote all of our own verses because we were like, well, we like the pairings that they came up with, but we have our own ships. So, you know, we're going to force those into the song.
I was going to say it must be tricky because you're to be applauded for sort of modernizing a lot of that style of music, because a lot of those, especially the older folk songs, are not really known as being that politically correct, shall we say?
This is very accurate. And actually, a while ago, somebody came to me and was like, oh, have you heard the Sailor's Alphabet? And I was like, no, actually, this is a song I have not heard. And they were like, you would love it. It is so dirty. It's so filthy. You're going to love it. Here, listen to it, you know, and stuff like that. And I had heard a couple of parodies done of it, but I hadn't heard the original. And I went back to this person after hearing this and was like, why would you think that I would enjoy this? Because it was probably the most sexist, racist, like just horrible. I mean, it was amazingly, I can't even, like, I don't encourage anybody to look it up, but if you look it up, like, just be aware that is, you know, it's just an absolutely horrific song, to be perfectly honest. Like, I was shocked, and I'm very happy of how far we have come, you know, as a society but I also was very like, oh my gosh, this is the type of music that people think I like, you know, they're like, you enjoy this because it's shocking. And I'm like, no, I enjoy filthy lyrics because I like sex. Like, there's a difference, you know. I'm not trying to cause people to be offended. I'm trying to cause them to think about, you know, things and like learn and be like, oh, well, yeah, I guess, you know, I guess sex isn't that bad. Or like, I guess, you know, sexuality is something to be educated on versus be, you know, prudish about, et cetera. And so I took that song. I took the Sailor's Alphabet, and with the help of some friends, rewrote it into the alphabet song that we are going to have on the new album. And it's all about sex education. So instead of like, just like this horrific lyrics, it's like, oh, you know, let's learn about dildos and things. So, so, you know, it's like, you know, the music of the time definitely is not, it's one of those things where it's very, very, you know, you have to be picky and choosy about what you do. And there's a lot of lyric rewrites that happen, which is why we've just decided, you know what, screw it. We're going to rewrite all the lyrics, but the tune's great. You know, the tune's great.
I was going to say it's a tricky thing. So you're to be commended just for, I guess, cleaning some of that stuff up
in some ways making it even dirtier. So, you know.
And you can be commended for that, too.
Exactly.
But speaking of dirty things, I see that Mike is ready and the chair, the geek seat is hungry. So,
okay.
I believe you are the first victim of 2017.
Ooh. That's exciting.
So it's all shiny and new and cleaned off. We hosed it down before the show started.
Oh, good.
That's
good.
How we spend our holidays.
Well, we had 2016 in it last week. So, you know, it's always a good thing.
Yeah. Now that the year is over, fresh start. Yeah.
Exactly. And so glad to be gone with that awful year. All right, Saber, your first question in the Geek Seed. What was your favorite geek out moment?
So favorite geek out moment. I would have to say, so I'm a really big Lord of the Rings fan. Like, I was very obsessive. I was very obsessive over the books as a teenager. I'm still pretty, I still read through all of them including the Silmarillion every year. Or at least I try. That's sort of my just like constant reading is the Lord of the Rings series. And after I had read them for the second time when I was 14, the first movie came out and I begged my parents to go see it. And I just remember like crying in the theater when Gandalf comes over the hill into the Shire, because it was just everything I had ever pictured, you know?
It actually felt like the book came to life.
Right, exactly. And then, as I like to say, you know, like at that moment, Peter Jackson became a god to me. And then he screwed it all up in the Two Towers. But, you know, but that moment, like, it still really speaks to me. And it's one of the reasons why at that age, I really wanted to get into filmmaking was literally that moment of just being able to translate words into that image. And, oh gosh, like just the little nerd inside of me was like, yay, it's real.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that one. But let's look at the other side. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Oh goodness. I'd have to say my most disappointing geek out moment. It's like, it's so hard to come up with something for that because I don't have very many disappointing geek out moments. I would have to say, I'm trying to think. Sorry.
No. If you don't, you don't.
I don't know. I don't have anything that I think is like specifically in my nerd life that has like really, really disappointed me. I mean, you know, there's been films that have come out that have not really followed source material, and but nothing has really struck me as being like something so awful that I couldn't, you know, recover from it. You know, I still love my, you know, the different actors who, you know, maybe did a disappointing performance and things like that.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, no. So I don't think I've had disappointing geek out moments, you know, unless you count like the number of times that, you know, I've had to deal with like geeks who just won't listen, because that's a problem.
I'm sure you get that a lot at cons and such.
You know, it's interesting because we've been really, really fortunate as far as the Misbehavin' Maidens goes, where we haven't had a whole lot of negative reaction, aside from people being like, oh, you're too dirty for me, and like, I don't want to listen to this. It's like, that's fine. We totally understand that. Like, everybody needs to have their own level of comfort, right? But we haven't had a whole lot of reaction of people being like, I don't agree with what you have to say or anything like that. So that's been really good. But I would say just on a personal level, like a lot of times when because I also do like sexual education courses and stuff like that. And there are times where people literally deny science to my face. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You can go deny science in the corner over there. I'm going to talk to the sane people over here now. So
yeah. And we're going to see more and more about that.
Yeah. So I that would probably be my most disappointing geek moment.
Okay. What geeks you out the most?
I hope I can say this, but honestly, sex. Like the human body and the way it reacts to other human bodies, and, you know, just the way that we as humans achieve pleasure and things like that, that is just blows my mind every time I study. You know, I've been studying sexology and human pleasure for about 10 years now. And I've been working professionally in the industry for almost 4 years. And there's much out there. Like it's amazing. I work as a sexual educator, and it's one of those things where I spend a lot of time around the technology that's coming out for toys too. And that just blows my mind, you know, like all of the programmable toys now on the market and the apps that there's a game, there's a video game that you can play with a toy now. So during sex, essentially, you're also trying to get points in a video game. So, you know, just saying that it's very correlated at this point. And I'm like, well, nerds really like to get laid. So,
well, it's very true. Look at Dragon Con right there.
Exactly.
What turns your geek off?
So this is gonna lose me so many people. I do not like classic sci-fi.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of those things where I enjoy Star Wars. Star Wars was one of the very first, I would say, like that I can remember in my childhood, like nerd films, watching, you know, being like recognizing that this was something different than what the rest of society was telling me was cool, you know? But I, and I enjoyed that. And as an adult, I enjoyed Firefly a lot, but you know, Star Trek is not really my jam, you know, Battlestar Galactica, like, you know, those series just never really reached me, I guess. I'm really more into like superheroes and fantasy. So.
Well, that's understandable, to each their own, as we like to say on the show. Mm-hmm. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
So interestingly enough, now that I've been like, oh, I'm not really into sci-fi. I actually really want to meet Inara from Firefly. I feel like she and I would get along really, really well. I feel like she would have some amazing pointers for me as far as, you know, like sexual education and things. And I think she's just a really powerful character in the series, being basically the only non-fighting character throughout, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, Shepherd Book and the Doctor don't really, they do a whole lot of fighting, but they still have those elements where they fight. And Inara has to be this character that is very, she's not sidelined. She's obviously very part of the story, but she's very removed from the rest, sort of just like watching everybody. And that's a way that I felt growing up. And so I feel like I could relate to the character really well. But on the other hand, I would say that Captain Jack from Doctor Who, I've been told that he and I would get along on many amazing adventures together. So, you know, I'm just saying that would be a good team up too.
I could really see that, actually. What fictional character would you not like to meet, though?
There's so many that are, you know, obviously just really, really terrible as far as like being a villain or something like that. But honestly, a character that really pisses me off, which is also why I think sci-fi has always been like, for me, is James T. Kirk.
Really?
I know a lot of people like him.
What but, do you mean? I don't know.
Okay. It's one of those things where it's like a lot of people, you know, I mean, I would have to say that if I had to choose Star Trek, I would say Picard. I'm a Picard fan, but Kirk, just like, because of the way that he would go into a society, kind of mess it up and then be like, but no, Earth's ways are the only ways, and then just leave and like leave that society to deal with the fallout of like the nonsense that he would do. That always really pissed me off whenever I would watch a Star Trek episode. So yeah, I think I would just kind of, I might punch him in the face if I actually met him in person.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, now we know you don't want to meet William Shatner at a con. Okay.
Yeah. Shatner. I could meet Shatner. I like Shatner. It's Kirk specifically.
There you go.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
So, I am a misbehaving maiden, so I'm going to have to go with let's aim to misbehave.
That's perfect, actually. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Honestly, anything in the entertainment industry, preferably being the one doing the entertainment. So acting, singing, you know, something along those lines. But I really love directing, writing, photography, videography, editing. You know, I've always been interested in the film industry. That's really where a lot of my original sort of nerd passion came from as a young teenager, was wanting to create those scenes myself. But, you know, all that to say, I honestly have a pretty awesome job where I get to geek out over science and sex and electronics all day already. So it's one of those things where it's like, I have a pretty awesome nerdy job that I love. So that's great.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Anything involving coding. I have a couple friends that keep saying, oh, you know, you really should like look into, you know, being able to build your own website and all this stuff. And I keep sitting down and trying to do it and I just fail at it. So I like, having to do it as a job would be really bad. And I'm very glad that there are many, many other people out there that love it.
That's actually our number one answer.
See? Coding. Just saying.
Oh, exactly. It's not for you.
Yeah, not for me.
Okay. All right, Saber, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
I think I am.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
See, the problem is you say fantasy and, you know, my mind goes to many, many places.
I kind of figured that would happen. That's why we were talking off the air. It was like, gotta be careful.
Gotta be careful about what we say. So we'll take it a different route as far as that goes. So I'd have to say that my ultimate geek fantasy, would honestly probably to go on, like, just like as an actual plausible fantasy, I would say, is to be able to go and tour all the sets on New Zealand. You know, well, obviously the sets aren't there anymore, but tour all the places that they filmed Lord of the Rings in New Zealand. I would really, that's a goal in my life someday. So that's honestly, and it's funny because it's like, that's fairly tame, but that's really, really what I want to do. So
that's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. That is a great fantasy. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there's Hobbit hotels now in New Zealand.
I know. I'm like, oh, crap. You know, it's like, I know it's all touristy now, but I don't care. I got to go see it.
Well, Saber, guess what? You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations. Doesn't mean we're going to untie you from it, but it's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
But I know you have some recording to do. So you want to tell everyone about the Kickstarter you have going on?
Yeah. I'd really love to tell everybody about the Kickstarter. So the Misbehavin' Maidens is currently in the midst of recording our second album. We released our first album back in 2015. Dragon Con was kind of actually kind of our release party a little bit. It was our release convention at that time. We funded that one fully on Kickstarter. So we were like, let's do it again. So the Kickstarter is currently happening. www.misbehavinmaidens.com/Kickstarter. Kickstarter with a lowercase k. If you do uppercase, it doesn't work. I don't know. Again, this coding thing, not good at it. Anyway.
I see a theme there. I really see a theme.
I'm just saying. Anyway, so lowercase k. It'll take you to the Kickstarter page. We're actually fully funded at this point. Our fans are absolutely amazing and we love them very, very much. And we made our first stretch goal, which means that we're going to have 12 songs on the album instead of the original intended 10. And we're also recording a couple of extra fun things. And everybody who backs at the 18 plus reward level gets a magnet. So that's already funded. And now we're going for 9,000 and we're going to record even more extra stuff. And in addition to the magnet, like everybody gets coasters or something. Like, you know, we're adding more fun goodies for the people who are backing us versus like being like, we'll go to Hawaii if you give us money, or, you know, something crazy like that. You know, the money goes back to the backers, more so than will come back to us. And that's just because we want to thank our backers for being so amazing. And we did hit the 7,000 within the first 20 hours of the Kickstarter. So it was insanely successful. Very excited. But we wanted to get the word out there a little bit more. And also just because we were really, really excited about this album. We're really excited about the music that we're doing, the original pieces that we have. We're excited about the quality that we're going to be able to put out there. So we just want more people to hear it. And we want more people to be able to pre-order it so that we don't, you know, get the wrong amount or whatever. So
that is awesome.
That's very cool. Well, we'll definitely have a link to that as well as your other sites on our show notes.
Awesome. Yeah. I was trying to think if there was anything else going on with it, but no, I'm going to just go to the website, back us. We've got a lot of really, really cool rewards on a wide range of prices. And I should say, if you want to hear our first album to get an idea of what we do, if you look, I believe it's misbehavinmaidens.com/bandcamp. And that should take you to our Bandcamp page, and be able to hear our first album there. So
it's actually pretty funny because I did get your first album and I have it on my phone.
Yay!
And we play it in the car, and then all of a sudden when it comes up on the mix, it's like my son is in the back seat and it's like, oh, wait, wait, wait.
Oh, what? What? Yeah.
And he looks at me and he's like, Dad, you're being stupid there. I can. But he says that for most stuff nowadays, but that's a whole different story. But yeah, congratulations on the new album and the Kickstarter. And hopefully you'll be able to see these lovely ladies at a con or a show close to you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you want us to come out to a show, let the con know. Let the event know that you want to see us. That's how we get in, is having fans. You know, like, we can apply all we want, but unless fans ask for us, we're not going to, you know, we don't always get in. So ask for the maidens, you know, get, you know.
And once you, and Saber, once you get shows coming up, we'll put it in our con report.
That'd be awesome. We actually do have a show coming up in April, and we should have a couple more over the summer. So we'll make sure that we send all that info to you.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll take a break, and we are going to be looking at the world of Atari. That's how they show up, their honor and their pride. They said it was a sin and shame, and they winked at one another. Every drink in the place was full of the night Pat Murphy died.
Mrs. Murphy sat in the corner, pouring out her drink. Attention, shoppers. The new Atari cartridge game is in.
Excuse me.
Uh-oh. Doors again.
Ooh, Atari's air feedback.
It comes with 27 games, but that's just for starters. You can get 9 cartridges, 187
Ooh,
games.
Blackjack.
Oh! I'd like an Atari.
Sorry. Only our demonstrators left.
Mine!
No, George. Mine.
The new video computer system by Atari. More games, more fun.
Just last night, I was lost in the jungle with Pitfall Harry, surrounded by giant scorpions and man-eating crocodiles.
Well, Harry and I just grabbed the van, swung through the trees and over the tar pits and found the jungle treasure. It was really neat.
If you haven't met Pitfall Harry, you're missing the year's most incredible video game adventure. Pitfall for the Atari 2600 and Intellivision.
Since I met Pitfall Harry, no other man will do.
Pitfall, designed by David Crane for Activision.
This is the new Frogger home video game. Ribbit. It's just like the arcade game. You have to hop Frogger past these cars and trucks. Ha, missed. And back home to his lily pad. The new Frogger home video game. Bring it back to your pad.
Atari presents its newest star.
Vanguard.
Just like the arcade.
Sick zone.
Let me show him the mountain zone.
Hey, check it out.
Get the energy pod.
So long, Harley Rockets.
Hey, the rainbow zone is my turf. You can shoot in 4 directions.
All right.
I'll just freeze through the strike zone.
The wall. The wall. Yeah.
But fellas, who destroys the gun?
Luther destroys the gun.
Vanguard is here, only from Atari.
I got Donkey Kong, and now I'll get you too, Junior.
I'm Donkey Kong Jr., and that's my papa. I'm trying to save him, and boy, do I need your help.
Nintendo's Donkey Kong Jr., the arcade game, is now the Super Home video game.
Save your papa, huh? Save yourself first!
He's chasing me with snapping jaws, and I could fall!
Help Donkey Kong Jr. save his papa on your ColecoVision, Atari 2600 VCS, or Intellivision video game system.
Game players everywhere, please help me save my papa.
Something's coming up the plumbing portal, reaches in a bind. Giant turtles out to get him, creepy crabs are right behind. Spider flies, jeepers, giants, they're all coming out the pipes.
Mario, where are you?
It's Atari Mario Brothers, with Mario from Donkey Kong, his brother Luigi, and lots of crazy creatures. And it's twice the fun when two play at once, because you need all the help you can get.
Mario, where are you?
Mario Brothers, new from Atari.
Howdy, everyone. And now we're back, and we're here to talk about and celebrate 45 years. Hard to believe. 45 years of Atari. It was 1972 where the company was created, and boy, did it have a huge impact on pop culture as we know it, really. So, and here to talk all about it, we have with us Mark Heffernan is joining us again. Mark, welcome back.
Well, welcome back. I'm glad to be back on the station. I seem to be I seem to have been on here a lot lately.
You have. You have been on, and we like having you on. You are a good resource, sir.
So. Hey, Mike, I think we need to unveil the new Mark Heffernan chair here on the station.
Wait a minute. Because it could easily go the other way. So we'll see how it goes. So, and then also we have from the Adam and JP show, we couldn't do this show without 8-Bit Adam himself. Welcome to the station, sir.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm pretty pumped about this.
The newlywed Adam, actually.
That is I.
Congratulations, sir.
We're glad that you were broken free of that arrangement for a little while.
Right. Yep. Go speak it.
In other words, the chain just went a little further out to the microphone.
Exactly.
Make it quick.
Well, it's very awesome to have you guys with us. I mean, of course, and we're going to obviously show our age here, but I can think of very few things outside of maybe, you know, the debut of Star Wars, as well as a few others that in my youth affected not just my life, but I mean, pop culture as we know it, as Atari did. So big anniversary coming up with the 45th anniversary. Well, it'd be interesting to see what comes out that they've got going on this year about that. But in any case, I want to know a little bit about you guys' personal history with Atari. I'll just go first and say that I believe that I had a pretty much an Atari unit when it came out. I think that was, oh goodness, that of course it wasn't in 72 when the company was formed, but when the 2600 came out, I believe that there was one waiting for me on at Christmas morning. That's what my experience was, and it was literally a game changer. I know puns, right? We had a Pong game. And I don't know if it was because I know Atari issued out a Pong game, a home version of Pong. And I don't think our version of Pong was the Atari version, but we did have Pong. But then we upgraded, of course, like most everybody did. Now, I started with the 2600. Mark, what about you? Did you start with the 2600 as well?
It was definitely my first game system. We did not have a home Pong system.
Gotcha.
And we got our Atari in 1981.
Gotcha.
So a few years later. I thought it was interesting you said you got it the first year, because that would have been 1977. So you got yours really early on.
Not 70. I don't know if it was 77. It might have been 78, actually.
Okay, because it was Christmas 77, which is when the Atari VCS at the time,
yes,
as it was called.
Yeah, we didn't call it the 2600.
No, they didn't call it the 2600 until much later.
Yeah.
The VCS originally came out for Christmas 1977. So.
Good call. That's why we got
it. Which makes it 40 years old, which...
Yes, we are old. Adam, what about you?
I'll admit I'm a little bit younger. So I was born I'm born in 1984. So not until about 1988 I got my first Atari, way behind the times. But I was a huge fan of video games even at that young age of 4 years old. So I was just in tears of my mom and dad that I wanted a video game system, being the new Nintendo Entertainment System that came out a few years prior. I'm not sure if they thought I was ready for that just yet, so they went and got me a cheaper old version of the Atari 2600 released years prior, and I fell in love with the thing. I mean, I would spend all night playing Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man, which I guess all night to a 4-year-old is until 9:30 p.m. But that was me. I was there all night playing those games. So 1988, it was a little bit after the release, but that was my first introduction to video games in general, and it's just been a crazy history ever since.
Because you don't get the training. I mean, you don't get the brand new bike to train on, right?
So exactly. You get the old 10-year-old bike. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, it's scrapped. It's fine.
Now, Mike, did you start off with Pong, or did you have start off with the Atari?
No, we actually started out with Pong originally, and my parents actually saw it at a department store, and they thought, "Oh, this could keep the kids occupied for hours." And at the time, Pong did. I played with my sister, or did the different systems, and then we evolved. We got the Atari, probably in 78. I would want to say, or 79. And we, you know, remember playing, you know, the games like Adventure and playing games like Haunted House and Tank Battle and thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
Combat.
That's combat. Right.
That's like, well, I think there was only like, there was a couple of games that came with it, and Combat was one of the ones that came with mine.
I believe Pac-Man was the one I had. That was the Pac-Man game.
Pac-Man. And you are young.
Yo, yes. Because we were so excited when Pac-Man actually came to the Atari.
Yeah, I know.
And it was fun. Oh, the graphics. Pac-Man, he didn't even turn. It just stayed at one. It looked like he was just there. And the mouth opened and closed. But it was like it looked like a giant C or something, you know.
Well, okay. So, yeah, I want to add. But before I get more into the home use, now Atari started off with actual arcade games. And did you guys play any of those, or was the home experience your first experience with Atari?
I did both myself. I'm a huge arcade fan, pinball fan, and home console fan as well. So I was a fan of all those genres, really.
Oh, I remember, you know, doing the arcade games, Space Invaders.
Oh, yeah.
Pre Galaga, pre anything like that. It was Space Invaders was one of the first, other than Pong, was Space Invaders was the first really big game. And it was one of those had the reflection screen, because the screen actually was below and it had a mirror or something that reflected it. So you could see the game being played in front of you. Mm-hmm.
I didn't play a lot of arcade games. I can't recall if it was first home use because I'm old enough, and so are you, Mike, that it was like there wasn't arcades then. It was like the arcade games were in like adult places. Like they were like,
well, they were at the bars. Or
yeah.
Something.
They were at the bars. They were at the pizza parlors. They were at the bowling alleys, and this is when people could smoke everywhere. So if you were at a place playing arcade games, 9 times out of 10, when you came home, you smelled of smoke.
Oh, big time. I remember in the town I grew up in Gaithersburg, they opened a video arcade right down the street from the junior high that I went to. So this was 1980, 1981. And, you know, we purposely once a week didn't take the school bus home so we could go to the video arcade. We walked right past it. And we spent probably, at the time, big money at the time, $10 a week on video games easily. And that's all quarters. It wasn't 50 cents, a dollar or something to play. Everything was just a quarter.
Now, when Atari had the home game, of course, they had their own games that they were importing to the home use from the arcades, but they were also licensing out some games as well. And I'm a little bit blurred as to which were which. I know that Pong was Atari's, and I know that some of the other games that that Atari had, like Circus and Combat and Maze Craze, which is one of my favorites, and Adventure and Haunted House, as you mentioned, were all Atari. And I think most of those were created for the home use, but then they adapted games that were not their own license, like Space Invaders. I believe Asteroids was not their own.
Asteroids was Atari.
Oh, was it? Okay, cool.
But it was originally arcade, so it was a port of their own arcade game.
Gotcha. And then later on, of course, Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man and whatnot. But now, as far as those first early games, and we're just talking about the pure Atari games, which ones were you guys' favorites? Mike, we'll start with you.
Oh, man, of the originals? I think I've mentioned a few of those already, but I remember when Superman came out for the Atari. And I was so excited. This is my superheroes. This was, you know, this was my thing. And just loving for the original Atari, you know, being able to, you know, pretend to be the Superman. You could actually go from being Clark Kent and you had to find the telephone booth and turn into Superman. And then you had to find the green X's that were floating through the air, were kryptonite that you had to stay away from.
Was that an Atari game, or was that a game made for the Atari?
I think it was a game made for by the Atari, but it was only licensed on the Atari. It didn't show up on ColecoVision or some of the others.
Right, right, right. Yeah, there was
actually, DC, they licensed it from DC, and then DC actually created a comic called Atari Force.
Right.
Which was a really good comic, actually.
Yeah, I've heard the good things about that. They had a good creative team on that, and I can't remember who it was right now, but I remember that wasn't a bad book.
Well, by the time we get finished talking about this, I'll find out who worked on it. If yes. only we had something that we could look for that kind of stuff.
So, Mark, what about you? What about, like, just now, not talking about the ones that were other games imported for the Atari, but just like the Atari's own games?
So you don't want me to talk about the third party ones like Activision?
Not yet.
Okay.
I want to get to those in a minute, but.
Okay. Well, probably the ones that I liked the best was. Probably my favorite was actually Yar's Revenge.
Oh, I like that one too.
Oh yeah, that was that little bug thing.
That was the fly, and you were trying to kill the other bug on the other side. And that one was really insane when it got really fast, because in the swirls, which could kill you, would actually chase after you. When you got up to the higher levels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just, I could go on, you know, I got really good at it, and I could go on for like hours on that one. And that was created by a guy by the name of Howard Scott Warshaw, who created that one. And it was along with Raiders, and then later on.
Oh, E.T.
Ooh. E.T.
Yeah. Oh, ow.
Oof. It still burns.
But other favorites, I really liked Adventure. It was one of those, it was really the first quest game for the Atari, and you know, chasing after the dragons and having the bat take your stuff whenever you had something. It was a lot of fun. And then, of course, one of the interesting things about Adventure was it was one of the first games to include a secret Easter egg, which was included by the creator, Warren Robinette, who was upset with Atari because he wasn't getting credited for his games. So he stuck his little name in there, and if you found the Easter egg, you saw his name.
That's cool. Oh, Mike, Atari Force. Here we go. Atari Force was written by Jerry Conway and Roy Thomas.
There you go. Two of the best.
And the artists included Ross Andrew, Gil Kane, Dick Giordano, and Mike DiCarlo.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. It's too bad that because it was licensed and everything, that's not collected or anything. But you can usually find those in the quarter bins, unfortunately, because it doesn't speak to the quality of it, because it was a really good book. Adam, what about you? What are some of your favorite Atari games?
Just Atari. You guys have named a lot of the great ones. Maze Craze. I was a big fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark, like you said earlier. I was a big fan of the original launch titles as well. Did you guys ever play Air Sea Battle? That was a good
classic
game. Yes.
Yeah, people always kind of go to combat, but I was more of an Air Sea Battle guy myself. You guys have said a lot already. It's just kind of the stuff that stands out to me with those three officially, really.
Yeah, I think we reach a ceiling, because as good as all the Atari games were that Atari made in-house, certainly once the third parties – and I don't know, and maybe Mark, you know this, but I don't know the history as far as licensing, as far as making games for this, because it seems to me that Atari is their best interest to just have them – only make games for themselves, but it seems like anybody could make games for Atari after a while, the 2600 anyway. And I don't know if that was I don't know how that worked behind the scenes, but certainly it got to the point where it was almost like to their detriment, because certainly Activision being at the forefront, they were coming out at games with really pushed the graphics to something that we hadn't seen before. I mean, you thought that, you know, with the 2600, the graphics, the 8-bit graphics were only going to get like so good. You would only have really dots as people. But then you know, like something like Pitfall would come along and you'd be like, that looks like a person.
The original Pitfall was awesome. Mm-hmm. When you had to jump over the alligators, which opened all their mouths at the same time.
You compare the graphics to Pitfall with the graphics as cool as the game was for Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it's like, yeah, that Pitfall looked more like a guy with a whip than Raiders did.
Right.
It always felt like Activision, you know, always took it to the next level compared to the Atari games.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I think they upped the game big time. Another pun.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there was others like Fox and then Parker Brothers. Parker Brothers put out, of course, Empire Strikes Back, which is the one I probably spent more time than any on.
Oh, the walkers were awesome.
Oh, so good. So good. And it was so good, but that's also when I realized that the inherent problem that I had with Atari games of all kinds is that there was no end to them. Like, it was constant repetition. Like, of course, you know, we'd seen that with Space Invaders and Asteroids and whatnot, but with... I was determined to get that last walker on Empire Strikes Back. And I remember the day that I did, and I was so excited because there were no walkers on my screen. I was like, yes, certainly I'm going to get some sort of celebration, or nothing happened except for another walker just came out. And I was like, well, I've kind of done this game now. Like, and my wrist really hurt too. Because that was the other thing. I mean, you got... Basically, since there was no end story-wise to the games, you just played them until either your controller broke or your wrist did.
Well, you have to remember, this was early on. Adventure was the first quest game where you actually had an end.
Yes, true.
You know, Pitfall, for example, also had a definite end. You had 20 minutes, and could you get all the treasure in the 20 minutes.
I don't think I ever did that.
The thing is, if you were going to, I never did either, but you actually would have, if you actually wanted to get a perfect score, you actually had to take the time, explore the game, map it out. And when I mean map it out, I mean on a piece of paper, you know, to figure out how to actually get all the treasure within the 20 minute time frame.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was a bit of a challenge to do. I tried it, you know, mapping it out and everything. Finally just said, you know what, I'm never going to get it, you know, because it was like, you know, but there are people that did. And so, I mean, you know, Pitfall was one of the biggest sellers for the Atari, you know, even though it wasn't Activision game.
It was, and there was an end to the Raiders game too. I do remember that, and because it was basically how high, you know, could you get, like, in terms of getting all the stuff. I think the only Easter egg that I never was able to find in Raiders of the Lost Ark was there's at one point where you can see Yar from Yar's Revenge, and I never was able to make that happen.
Wow.
You got a glimpse of him. My understanding was you got a glimpse of him while you had to do the right maneuvers, and then when you were falling off a cliff to your death, you would see him.
Really? I've never heard that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And because we actually, I remember my cousin and I, we actually were so into the game, you could write in, and we got instructions and maps and everything like that from Atari. They did a really great promotional campaign for that one. So Atari comes out, and it's the biggest thing ever as far as home gaming goes. There are other consoles out there that try to compete. Intellivision is probably the biggest one early on, but that fails pretty soon. And then there's some that come along later, but Atari really is the one that kind of set the tone, and probably set the tone because of what Atari did. The gaming industry is probably still doing some things that they started. Is that fair to say?
Well, Atari, when Activision first started producing games, because they were the first, Atari wanted to sue them you know, because they wanted to keep all the money to themselves, obviously.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you're making games for our platform.
Yeah, and so what ended up happening eventually was, of course, they settled out of court, and Activision would pay Atari a fee, which is basically what third-party software companies do nowadays. They pay PlayStation or Xbox a fee to release games for that, for their platform. So the whole idea of having third parties come in, you know, and, you know, do that was sort of started with Atari and Activision in some ways. You know, the idea of the third party company would pay you a fee and then they could release the games. The problem with the Atari was, as we'll eventually get to, is so many companies released games for the Atari in the early 1980s that there became a glut eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Anything else that you can think of? Maybe, Adam, anything that you can think of that Atari started that's probably still in play today as far as gaming goes?
Just in general, the idea of successful and well-made home console to play these games that quality-wise you would usually find in the smoke-filled arcades at the time can now be found in your living room. And now we have Xbox Ones and PlayStation 4s, and not only are those systems playing video games, they're streaming Netflix. They have you can do Skype video call. I mean, everything can be done through this main living room console, which to me was just all originated with the Atari 2600.
I love the I think also the packaging, the way that they did the cartridges. I mean, even though people don't use cartridges now, but still that idea of going to the store and buying a pretty package, because back then, and there was a beautiful book that just came out called The Art of Atari, and back then, that was our gateway to know what those dots were really supposed to look like. Like, we saw it, like, and when you played Adventure, of course, you were just a square on the screen, but because you had seen the package art, you were a knight, you know, a warrior.
Right.
And there was, like, a big old dragon, and that they really did a great job, I think, in marketing that and putting that in your mindset as far as what you were supposed to be looking at. Because obviously, the graphics weren't quite there as to what they could even come up with.
Oh, not even close. Because if you think about it, even the controllers and such, because you had the joystick and you had a separate, like, Pong-type controller, too.
Yeah, there was the dial, because we used that for Circus.
Exactly. But if you remember, you know, you had to adjust from something you had with the arcade games, like something like Missile Command, where you had, you know, the trackball. And you had the three buttons for the different places you shot the missiles from, where you only had the joystick with the working on the Atari.
Yeah, I think they realized that the joystick was in the future for consoles was not the way to go. As cool as it was, those things broke a lot. And they were very limited. I still, to this day, have never really gotten used to you know, the up, up, down, down keypads that consoles like have had ever since. But certainly, you know, the joystick with one button was very limited.
Well, you have to remember the Atari, when it originally came out, only had 4K.
Oh, right.
Imagine 4K. You know, in the gigabit era.
And he doesn't mean 4K TVs, folks.
Right.
Yeah, we're talking 4K of code. And, you know,
isn't that unbelievable how far we've come since then? I mean, that seems insane now.
Yeah, but, I mean, think about how much the Atari cost originally, $200.
Yep.
And in 1970s money, that was a lot of money.
It was.
I did a currency translation on that, and that is today $840. That's what it translates to. $840.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just bought the Rogue One novelization for $30, and Star Wars the novelization when it came out was $2. I mean,
but, well,
that gives you a difference in how much the money you know, how expensive the machine was as well.
It's true, but I really am having a hard time thinking that my parents came up with that much cash back then. Like, you know, that, I mean, obviously it was a lot, but I don't know if it really felt like that much. You know what I mean? Because like I said, these things were everywhere. And it wasn't like, I mean, everybody could afford them after a while. So I know very few people who didn't have an Atari. The one thing I really love about the design of it, and I'm looking at a picture of one now that looks exactly like the one at my house, but it's so 70s because it's got what really wood kills grain, me is wood the grain. Wood paneling in the front. Like it's got wood paneling on it. Like that's a state of the art computer with wood paneling. Mm-hmm. Well, just like your station wagon.
I do have something to admit to you, Mike, there.
What's that?
I was actually, we didn't stay on the Atari all that long when I was a kid because my aunt and uncle bought us for the following Christmas, they bought us an Odyssey 3.
Oh.
If you remember that, it actually had a keyboard on, like a typewriter keyboard on the front of it.
We did not upgrade until Coleco came out with the Atom.
Oh, okay. Because we also then
which didn't last very long, by the way.
Because there was ColecoVision also.
Yes, we didn't have a Coleco. We had the Atom computer, and I think we actually did switch over to Coleco. Was Coleco the one that had the game it came with was Donkey Kong?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, so they did have one of those.
Yep.
And Atom's could actually Atom computers was actually originally envisioned as a addition to the ColecoVision. You turned your ColecoVision into a computer, so Atoms could play ColecoVision games as well.
Yeah, I think that's what we had. And the key also with the success of Coleco when it came out, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, but was that you could play with an adapter, you could play Atari games on it. So you really had the best of both worlds. You had a new machine that could play your old games, which is something that Atari didn't think of doing when they came out with the 5200, which was, I think, okay. So yeah, so Atari had this huge success for. I don't think it was quite a decade, but certainly it was a pretty long time. It looked like they could do no wrong, and then like you said, Mark, there were just too many games. The games were getting poor. I think the graphics, certainly compared to what was in the arcades, was getting to the point where they just reached their limit. They could not adapt those to a suitable suitable way.
Don't even get me started on the Journey game they did for the Atari.
The Flash Gordon game that Fox came out was just awful. and what was it, MASH, where you're like you're helicoptering patients from one place to another. It's just
Oh, I loved it, but it had the 8-bit version of the theme song to MASH.
Yes. I think they made strides. I think one of the best games they came out with later on was their version of Ms. Pac-Man, which was so much better than Pac-Man.
Yes.
Well, you have to remember when they licensed Pac-Man originally, that was a big deal. It was 1982. Absolutely. And the problem was, and this also goes for E.T. as well, they rushed the development of it. They wanted Pac-Man out there so darn quickly. They rushed the development of it, and the problem with Pac-Man is actually the best selling Atari 2600 game. You know, they sold more cartridges of Pac-Man than any other cartridge. But the thing is people when they got it were disappointed with it because it didn't look like the arcade game.
Right. Oh, yeah. It didn't sound like it either.
I will say this much. You know, a lot of people bang on the Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man because it doesn't look like the arcade game. As it just a maze game, if they took the Pac-Man off of it and just called it something else entirely.
Right. Maze Craze 2.
It works.
Yeah, I think as a game itself, it's not bad. But it's not Pac-Man, which was what it was being sold as. I mean, a lot of people bang on E.T. as well. E.T. is is playable. It's a decent game. There are a lot worse games for the 2600 than Atari's E.T. But everybody says, oh, E.T. is the worst game ever. No, I played worse games than E.T. E.T. is not a great game, but it is playable, and you can get some enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But people were disappointed, and the fact that a lot of these other companies were putting out games that people were buying and were being disappointed in is what led to eventually the video game crash, because people were getting tired of buying $30 games and then being disappointed with them.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, do we also want to talk about the Atari computers that they came out with during this period also?
If you want to mention it, because I didn't have one, so I don't know how. Yeah.
Well, the Atari computers were supposed to be the step up. This is before the 5200.
Yeah.
And they came out with two models of it, and I think they had 8K of RAM in it.
Ooh.
You know, and it actually had an actual keyboard with it. And the big game that actually came with it was a game called Star Raiders.
I think I remember that.
And I loved going to my friend's house and playing Star Raiders, because you were able to go from solar system to solar system and, you know, fight if bad guys were there, or you had to refuel to the shuttle, and you actually had to try to line up. It was more advanced than anything you'd had seen in video games before. And because it was more free play. It wasn't that you had missions or anything. It was just like roaming the galaxy.
Gotcha.
And everything. And it was pretty darn awesome for me. Because it was like the forerunners to, like, you know, these new ones where, you know, you have to conquer galaxies, or you go and, you know, establish new planets and stuff. It was the true forerunner for that. And that was all Atari that came up with that. And they tried coming out with a version of it for the 2600.
Yes.
And they actually came out with a new controller for it.
Yeah, it was a touchpad controller.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's the only controller I don't have for the 2600, mostly because I don't have Star Raiders. I have all the other controllers that they've released.
Before we move on to the 5200, do you, Mark, you still have your 2600? Is it your original 2600?
I have the original. I also have, if you saw that picture I posted on Facebook, I also have the 2600 Junior, which they came out with in the 1980s, which may be the one Adam bought. Because that's what they were selling at that time.
No, I think mine was a used at the time, so it was the old. Yeah,
okay.
It got at a yard sale.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly. You know, well, I found that one. I found that 2600 Junior at a flea market back in the 1990s, back when you could still go to flea markets and thrift stores and actually find 2600 stuff.
They're around a lot, but then, yeah, now they're
collecting. Well, nowadays, when the 2000s came in and retro gaming came in, all that stuff disappeared from the thrift stores. Now you go to a thrift store, you're not going to find anything. But back in the 1990s, you could find tons of 2600 stuff just laying around, because people wanted to get it out of their house, out of their out of their closet. So they took it down to Goodwill or down to the flea market, so you could get a lot of stuff, you know, for the 2600, and you could get it for cheap back in the 1990s. Good luck doing that now. There used to be a phrase for people who would go to thrift stores, and this was based on a game. It was called Chasing the Chuck Wagon. And that's based on a dog food commercial where they actually released a video game for the 2600 called Chase the Chuck Wagon. And you're a dog chasing the Chuck Wagon.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
There's another game that they released called Kool-Aid Man.
I do remember that.
Oh, yeah.
They gave that away.
And the Chase the Chuck Wagon was they gave away that game if you bought enough bags of dog food.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, there was a lot of companies releasing games for the 2600 back then. Even some adult ones too.
Oh, I know. But also there were a ton of games actually that they were released for Japan only. and you had to do something special to your Atari to make them work on it, on the machine. If I remember correctly, you had to solder something.
I don't remember that for the 2600. I do remember that for the NES.
Hack your Atari.
Oh yeah.
Real quick, Adam, do you still have your 2600?
I do. I have it right next to me right now. The same one I got back in 1988.
Nice. Mike, do you still have yours?
Oh, no.
Mine, I believe mine is in my parents' attic still. I need desperately to see if it's still there and get it out. But
well, I'm sure it probably still works, because actually when they dug up all those cartridges from New Mexico
right.
a couple of years ago, they actually plugged one in and it actually worked.
Nice.
And that's, this is the ones that they buried in New Mexico. So it was in a dump for many years and it still worked.
Nice. Yeah, they were durable. They built them tough back then.
So, yeah. And the kids don't realize that, you know, you had to put your TV on channel 3 or channel 4.
Yes.
And then you had, you know, the little switch in the back that, you know, had to hook up to the UHF antenna part. And, you know, you hooked it in and you had to flip it from TV to game.
Yep. You had to get off the couch.
and the worst thing about that is now with all the newfangled TVs is it's getting harder to hook up the old equipment to newer TVs.
Yeah. You need adapters and such for it.
Yeah, you need to buy
that properly. It looks terrible.
Yeah. I mean, even my NES looks terrible on my new TV.
Yeah.
You know, with that's the reason why I've got a Retron to play NES games, because at least they look decent.
Yeah, your 4K video game will not look good on your 4K TV, folks.
Right.
It doesn't translate that well. It's a different 4K. Very good. All right, so 1982, 5200 comes out. Anybody buy it?
No.
Thankfully not.
No, none of us bought it, and that tells you everything about the
5200. Well, what happened there was that at the same time, ColecoVision came out.
Yeah.
And the packing game for ColecoVision was Donkey Kong.
Which was the biggest game probably since Pac-Man.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when if people had the money to buy a new machine, which one do you want to buy? Atari 5200 with Super Breakout? Or which was a packing game, or ColecoVision with Donkey Kong. Yeah. Well, and especially since the 2600 edition of Donkey Kong was horrible, people bought.
Well, I think they did that on purpose.
Weren't these 16K machines now?
No, these were still 8-bit machines.
Oh wow!
So, but the thing is you know, like the Atari version of Donkey Kong was terrible. It only did 2 screens. It wasn't very good. And so if people wanted to play an arcade, a close to arcade version, they bought the ColecoVision. And the 5200 had one glaring fault. The analog joysticks broke.
Ooh, they were terrible.
They were terrible. As a matter of fact, nowadays, if you're looking to buy a 5200 on eBay or something, and they say, and if people say it works, make sure you email them and ask them, do the joysticks work? Because a lot of people will turn on the, when they're selling their old equipment, they'll turn it on. Okay, well, it turns on, it works, right? Well, if the joystick doesn't work, then it doesn't work. So, and the 5200 joysticks just constantly broke. I mean, the worst design joysticks ever.
For sure. It was more like a remote control. It had the number dial pad on there, and it was just awkward. It was an awkward thing.
Well, so ColecoVision had that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. With the different displays you could change.
Exactly. And they were going with what the Intellivision did, but worse.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the ColecoVision controllers are not very good either. You know, which is the reason I think they eventually went to the D-pads, like what the NES had.
Yeah. Okay, so nobody bought the 5200, and I'd be really impressed if anybody has a 7800. Because that is, I don't even, I think there may be about 10 made.
well, so, there was more than that.
I know. I'm just kidding. But obviously this was because the graphics were not that good, because Atari didn't have, because already you could just tell that the graphics on the 5200 were not as good as what Coleco was offering. So the graphics were not as good. The games that they had were not as good as Coleco. They was not backwards compatible, so you basically were throwing away all your old games. There were just a lot of big mistakes that they made, and that more than I know that E.T. is usually fingered as the cause for the death of Atari, but really it was poor planning and not being able to adapt, and the 5200, I think, is the real reason that it failed. And then we see Atari goes through a bunch of different changes. It gets bought and repackaged and all these other companies. It gets like just shifted around. I tell you, the only time that the next thing I knew when I saw the Atari logo was when I was playing Unreal Tournament, right? Because this is an Unreal Tournament. Doesn't that have the Atari logo on it?
I believe Atari bought that. I think they do own that now.
Right. So, and I was like, and I almost had a little tear in my eye. I was like, oh my God, I'm playing an Atari game. But that was a good, you know, two decades.
Right.
Like and they just really disappeared. I mean, I know that they came out with, they were kind of an entity, but they were not really a group that was doing anything of note.
Well, yeah. What happened was, is in 1984, because Warner Brothers bought Atari in 1976.
Yeah, right before the console came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Warner in 1984, after losing a bunch of money on Atari, sold it, broke it up and sold it off. They, one part, which was the computers, was called Atari, went off and did their own thing called Atari Corporation. Then another company bought the arcade and called it Atari Games. So there's actually two Ataris running around for a while.
Wow.
That's
not confusing.
Yeah. I mean, it's confusing once you get past 1984. Well, the computer division eventually got back into video games. They made the Atari Lynx in the early 90s, which was a handheld that competed with Game Boy. And then eventually they tried to come out with their own 64-bit system, the Atari Jaguar, that died basically because it had no games except for one really good game, which was probably the best adaptation of Tempest ever. It's the only reason to buy the system is to play Tempest 2000.
You know what? I do remember that. I do remember Tempest 2000 because Tempest was a pretty cool game. And I do remember that the graphics on the Jaguar looked really like the arcade game. It looked really sweet.
Oh, yeah. Tempest 2000 is a great game. Sadly, that was about the only game on the Atari Jaguar that was even worth playing. There was a couple of others, but because I actually had one. I don't have it anymore, but...
Yeah, I still have mine. It's an eyesore, but I own it. I love the Alien versus Predator game is my favorite one in that system. It stands out to me as a
that was another of the good ones. I mean, they also did a decent, a relatively decent port of Wolfenstein 3D, and I think they also did one of Doom, if I remember correctly.
Wow, okay.
And the controller for the Jaguar was kind of it was odd as well. It almost brought back that Atari 5200 kind of remote control feel to it.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of odd.
Yeah. The biggest problem, of course, was is people with third-party developers, you know, would rather go with, at the time, either Sega or Nintendo because, obviously, they trusted Nintendo and Sega a lot more than Atari, which of course, makes sense, you know. But then the other thing is, of course, then you have Atari Games, which, of course, at the time was releasing video games under the name of Tengen. And, of course, Tengen is infamous for releasing not licensed NES cartridges.
Yeah, the only non-gray carts.
Yeah, they're black, and the good version of Tetris for NES.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, which of course they had to take off the market because Nintendo wanted to sell their version, which isn't as good, in my opinion.
Well, definitely looking at the 2000s on, it's just, I mean, I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry, and it's just a mess of, you know, Info Games is doing this, and then it sells over here, and it names it this, and it's just back and forth with the weirdest thing about this whole thing is had the very last entry in Wikipedia is from 2014. And it says Atari announced a new corporate strategy that would include a focus on, quote, new audiences, specifically LGBT, social casinos, real money gambling, and YouTube. And it's like, what? Like, so obviously Atari is not quite what we remember. Definitely, I don't think, despite what happened in the early 80s, and the fact that it just, you know, it's still around, but it's just nothing compared to what it used to. And it was the first and home console that took over the country and the world, and it paved the way. Is there anything maybe in the last 20 years regarding Atari that you guys want to mention? Is that anything that stands out? Okay, so
that was almost a cricket moment.
So no, but you know, and believe it or not, the time's almost up for the topic. So just real quick, like if anybody was out there wanted to get their hands on either an old Atari or some of the. You know, you can play a lot of the old games now just, I mean, heck, it's only 4K, right? So you can pick them up almost anywhere. There's a lot of simulators out there. What game would you recommend? Start with you, Mark.
You mean a system or just a single game?
The single game.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're going to play a single game for Atari, I'm going to go back to my favorite. I'm going to say Yar's Revenge. Nice. I mean, it is a really awesome game, and you know, Howard Scott Warshaw really did a good job on that one. I mean, there's a lot of good Activision games out there, but stick to the Activision ones and some of the Atari ones. A lot of the other ones are not really good. Although there are a couple of Imagic ones that are really good, like Demon Attack's really good, and M Network, which was Mattel. Did a really good football game, probably the best football game for the 2600.
Oh yeah, good call. Because I can remember the graphics on their Atari football, and it was oof. Like I think some of the players like ghosted. It was really weird. Adam, what about you? What game?
First off, I'm not very good at many things in my life, but one thing I'm very, very good at is playing Ms. Pac-Man, and so I have to say that version of Ms. Pac-Man in the Atari 2600. I know it's not up to arcade standards. Probably many different better versions out there on different consoles even, but I just have such fond memories of playing many, many hours of Ms. Pac-Man on the Atari. I know there's no storyline whatsoever, not really a theme to it, but something about that Ms. Pac-Man, just the gameplay gets me hooked every time, be it through an arcade or the 2600 version. So I've got to say that. Frogger always stands out to me on there as well. Once again, I know there are better versions on the arcade and other consoles, but I thought the 2600 version of Frogger was pretty great.
Good yeah, I thought so as well. I thought the graphics didn't match up to what was in the arcade, but it played better.
Right. It did. Well. It was smooth. Yeah, smooth as it could be.
Mike, what about you?
That's a tough one. It's like trying to pick one of your favorite children or something like that.
Okay, wow.
Probably if I had to pick something, I'm going to go back to the classic. I'm going to go back to probably Adventure.
Nice.
Because you always wanted to try to keep away from that damn bat. Oh my God. It came to try to take whatever weapon you had or out of your hands. And it was just like, go into the next room, try to find whatever else was there. And it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, it was awesome to do. And then You know, there's so many other ones that I wanted to pick. You know, all of a sudden I picked into my head, oh, there was Defender, which was really awesome on the 2600.
Yeah, not bad.
Mm-hmm. Berserk, Berserk was also pretty good, too.
Exactly. Yes, Berserk was awesome.
One of my favorites was another one of my favorites was Megamania, which was really surreal. I mean, you're getting attacked by burgers and you have to shoot them up.
I do remember that.
I'll always be a Warlords fan. I do love Warlords.
Oh yeah. When for the foodie and you, when they came out with Burger Time.
Burger Time, yeah. Right.
Or yeah, there was a lot of food ones.
Yeah, yes. Tapper, root beer Tapper. Yeah.
Activision did one where you're assembling hamburgers called Pressure Cooker.
Yeah. And Burger Time was that on the Atari? I know it had an arcade release, but
That was done by Mattel M Network, right. Released that for the 2600. So
yeah,
well, for me, I spent most of my time playing combat just because there were so many different games within that game, which was awesome.
Did you ever play the one with the big plane and the three little planes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The one where the big plane always got shot up because it was that game was so unfair.
I know. It's like you didn't want to be that plane. And then Maze Craze, Empire Strikes Back was, man, if you want to talk about the really experiencing the futility of trying to fight one of those walkers, going up against those walkers, that game captured that, I think, immensely. And later on, my favorite arcade game that was transferred to Atari was Vanguard. I love Vanguard. I could play Vanguard for a long time. So, well, that's cool. Well, definitely. Thanks, guys. It was cool reminiscing. I'm definitely going to have to get on the phone and ask my parents where my Atari is now so I can bring that and see if I can adapt that to my TV and see if I can figure out how to work it.
They do have a lot of
simulators. Yeah,
they do. They have like the Atari flashbacks where you can. Mm-hmm. Where you can get a package of a lot of the Atari games. Activision has done a lot of collections over the years. So, I mean, if you don't want to go find the original equipment, you know, there are ways of playing the games.
You could actually get them on your phone now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You can download them from the app stores.
I would also definitely recommend, just to throw out for any Atari heads out there, the Art of Atari book that just came out from Dynamite is really awesome. And there's a really cool documentary on E.T. and what happened with that game. And I definitely I think it's on Netflix. So you guys should check that out as well. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
I got a pocket full of quarters and I'm headed to the
Girls Take. I'm your host Angela, and this week this geek girl is talking about the new Doctor Who Christmas special. Now, it has been an entire year since we've had some new Doctor Who, and I was so excited for a new Capaldi episode. I wasn't sure how they were going to do superheroes in the Doctor Who world, but I was very intrigued. Also, the Christmas specials are normally my favorites out of the series of episodes, so I'm always excited for them. I know many think that they're cheesy or don't like them as much as the normal episodes, but they're some of my favorites. First off, I want to say I was so happy to have a Christmas special that didn't make me cry like a little baby. I did tear up at the end, but other than that, no ugly crying for me this year, which was a nice change from previous year's Christmas specials. Doctor Who did the superhero genre fantastically. They followed a very Superman approach, since the young boy in the story who gets his powers was a Superman fan, and the Doctor's reaction to Clark Kent being Superman when looking at the comic book is really, really funny. The love story in this episode was very, very cute, and it really fit the storyline well. And the superhero stuff was campy, but it fit the episode and the whole feel of what they were going for. The only thing that fell short for me was the villain, and that's because it was so secondary to everything else going on in the episode. Overall, I loved this year's Christmas special, and I am so excited for the coming season and the new companion. She seems like she's going to be so much fun. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
I'm going to bend to the left and move to the right. The hanky's too slow and Bunky's out of sight.
Welcome back, everyone. And now it's time for the return of the Con Report.
Con Report 2017. Woo!
Yay! Woohoo!
There was actually a convention happening this weekend on January 14th. It is the Warner Robins Comic Con. It is in Warner Robins, Georgia. And our good friend Mario puts this show on. We've had the pleasure of going there several times. It's a great show. Unfortunately, neither Mike and I are going to be able to make this show. I do want to give it a shout out because it is a fun show. It's going to have they're going to have some great guests. Right now, Teddy Long, the former GM of SmackDown, is supposed to be making an appearance. Our good friend Jason Flowers is going to be there. Artist Chris Garrett is going to be there. Tracy Yardley is going to be there. A lot of familiar folks, a lot of familiar names. If you are familiar with ESO, there will be a lot of familiar faces walking around that show. So I definitely encourage people to check it out. It is this Saturday, the 14th. By the time you're listening to this, it's probably tomorrow. So I apologize for the short notice, but it is a good show that I wanted to make sure that we at least mentioned on the show because Mauro is a good friend of ours, and it's unfortunate that we will not be able to be there. So hopefully we'll be penciled into his next show because Mauro puts on some good fun events. So and they're family friendly, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
So that is this Saturday, and then the next show that you're going to be able to see Mike and I at will actually be the Atlanta Comic Con. That is the ACC, as we like to call it. It is at the Marriott Century Center.
Yes, thank you. Sir.
I always forget there's so many Marriotts. So it's the Marriott Century Center, although this is the Marriott that houses most of the events that we go to all year. But the Marriott Century Center, just a little north east of Atlanta. It's a great one-day show. There's a lot of cool guests that are going to be there. Aftershock publisher Joe Pruitt is going to be there. He's also a writer of some renown and publisher, editor. Great guy. Definitely, if you are interested in the comic scene, he's a good guy to talk to. The award-winning Bobby Nash will be there. And actually, there will be an appearance by J.R. Mounts. Yes, Mr. Scary Tales, Mr. Cucumbersome himself will be at this ACC. And Mike and I will be there. Now, we won't have a table, so we're just going to go and slum it, so to speak. We'll just be hanging around. You'll probably be able to find Mike around the pop figures. I'm not going to lie. He'll be deciding which ones that he's going to take home.
Guilty.
And I will be looking at comics, talking to folks, and trying to keep a low profile. No, just kidding. Every time we go, we meet a lot of listeners and see a lot of familiar, friendly faces, a lot of friends of the show. A lot of times in the local area, people that have been on the show come to this event. So it's a good way to network. It's just a great, fun event. And it's Super Bowl Sunday. Can I say that? No. It's Big Game Sunday. Some big NFL thing is going to happen, football related, that day. And you would think, oh, my goodness, that's such a big event. This comic show probably doesn't do well. Well, it's the best one of the year. It's actually more people, not to scare you because it's not so many people that it's so crowded, but there's a lot of vendors, very exciting, very good atmosphere, a lot of people in costumes. Definitely encourage you guys to come out. So that is February 5th, and I hope to see you guys there. And meanwhile, Mike and I are still talking. We've got a lot of conventions on our plate that we're looking at appearing in and participating in. So please continue to listen to us. And if you have a convention out there that you would like us to help promote and participate in, please reach out to us because we are right now our schedule. We're still trying to figure out a lot of dates. So if you've got a convention we'd like to work you in somehow, especially if you're in the Southeast region where we can get to it pretty easily. And if no matter where you are, if you're putting on an event or you just want to rave about an event that you've been to, please contact us because we love talking about conventions.
Exactly. And it doesn't even have to be just a Comic-Con. It could be any kind of con.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Not a Comic Con. Well, heck, a lot of Comic Cons aren't about comics anymore. So, but if you've got an event, any kind of event that you want to rave about or you want us to help promote, whether it's a concert or a seminar or a book signing or, you know, surprise us because, you know, we've had definitely a lot of different events come our way. And the more out of the norm they are, the more interesting they are to report on. So please let us know and contact us, because if you need people there, we can try to get the word out for you.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Air Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for being here this week. Let's thank our guests first. And of course, Mr. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on. I know I've been on quite a bit lately. Hope I don't wear out my welcome.
Well, this is your, we didn't want to tell you, but this is the last time your episode you're going to be on 27. Because you were so many in 2016, we kind of have to balance it out.
That seems fair.
The good and bad, you know. But anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Well, I just want to mention that Hulanta's coming up in early May. I'm already working heavily on the British track. Got a lot of fun stuff planned. I'm hoping, especially considering it's the 40th anniversary of the Atari 2600, and I actually have a working 2600, that maybe we might be able to set it up for a while at Hulanta if people want to actually come out and play some of these games that we've been talking about. I don't know if it'll happen, but I'm trying to work towards that.
That could get kind of dangerous putting it out at a convention or something like that.
Yeah, we'll have to see on that one, you know. But if we can work it out, that could be a bit of fun for people. You know?
I think so. Yeah, you just have to make sure that you've got a really strong controller.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there won't be a couple of games available. I can tell you that. Some of those adult ones that we didn't mention. Although I played a couple of them.
Okay. Adam, thanks so much, my friend, for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's been a blast. I've wanted to come on for a while now. It's cool to actually be on here and see how it all works with you guys. It's awesome.
Well, now you could say, that's how they do it there.
We've got no problem. Okay. We're good.
We're going to take over the network in no time.
We're innocent bystanders, I promise.
You want to do a shout out real quick, sir?
Yeah, sure. So I come from the Adam and JP show. You can check us out at adamandjp.com. We are on the ESO network here, have been for, I guess it's been about 2 years now.
Yep,
I think
great addition.
We just celebrated the 2 year anniversary on the ESO network. We're very excited about that. We love everything you guys do. I think you guys yourselves need a shout out to you, because you need that credit where it is deserved. You guys have been doing this for a long, long time with a quality product every week, and you guys yourself need a shout out. You deserve it.
Oh, gosh. No, Adam and JP are great folks. If you don't listen to their show, these are two friends literally just talking each week about what's interesting to them, and they have a blast doing it. And it's portrayed on the show. You guys could see it, you know, and you know, feel it from how they're talking. And it's awesome.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And of course, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
What are we going to shout out about tonight, sir?
I'm going to shout out if people just for some strange reason want to hear me prattle on some more about this year and the things I'm looking forward to, because I mentioned a little bit in the last episode, but I do go in a little bit more in depth on Needless Things. And the most recent episode of Needless Things, we talk about some of the things that we're looking forward to this year. So a great group of guys over there and gals. It was always an honor to be on there and talk about the good things that are going to happen this year, because, you know, we've all had, you know, some weird things happen last year. So it's nice to go into this year with some things to look forward to.
Exactly. Now, this is going to be a great year, and knock on wood, it'll start off on a good note. One hopes. Run really hopes. And for me, I am going to do a quick shout out. I want to give a shout out to the folks at Nerdlanta. I sat in on their podcast / performance yesterday. I was one of their guests, and it was basically a great time to, you know, join, you know, some new kids on the block who are just starting to do a show. And they do it at a really cool Joystick Cafe, which is in downtown Atlanta. And I think it's in the old Fourth Ward area. And they do it every 2 weeks. And it's awesome. They have like different segments like ESO does. They have different guests each week. They had actually myself to talk about the ESO network. But then also we had Bob Carter, who many people here in Atlanta know is local radio personality, but he is also a lot of voice acting, and he does a voice acting school with his wife here in Atlanta. And so it's definitely a really great fun show. Look up Nerdlanta, and you know, they don't have a podcast per se yet that they record. They're trying out their feet to just get their act together per se. So it's actually a lot of fun, and thank you to Dan Carroll for hooking me up with these folks. And he was actually Santa last night. So it was like what Santa does after Christmas. So it was actually a lot of fun. So we will be back again next week when we are going to be looking at, kind of appropriate with what next week is, we are looking at Hail to the Chief, the presidential portrayal in movies and TV. So it should be a lot of fun to see how close to reality some of these presidents actually are. So it would be interesting to see, and we are going to have a lot of fun talking all about that. Thank you guys for a wonderful 2016. Rating-wise, our numbers have gone up. Still need you folks out there to leave feedback for us. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, you know, iHeartRadio, any place you pretty much could find podcast, ESO is up there. We have multiple shows from the network also. Just don't do Earth Station 1. Also, feel free to do Earth Station Who, Adam and JP, Cigar Nerds, Dr. Geek, you know, all the different shows that you could find on the network. You know, we would love you guys to leave feedback for us. It's just, it helps us get more people out there and, you know, gets us noticed. And, you know, that's what this is all about. We're not getting rich by doing this, but we're just having a great time. We're doing it from the heart, folks, as I said last night. So, you know, we definitely love you guys, and we are looking forward to bringing you some great shows in 2017. And, you know, please let us know what you think. ESOpodcast@gmail.com, or call us at 404-963-9057. All right, that wraps up the show for this week. We will be back again next time here on Earth Station 1. Peace. And we're done.
Yay.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you can also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.